On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. We're joined today by Dale Steinke, who's the Director of Agent for the Future Advisors. He's with the Independent Agent Channel for Liberty Mutual, which includes, as you guys all know, small commercial, Safeco, and state auto insurance. Dale, thanks so much for taking time today.
Hey, Peter, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. I'm checking a box on one of the things that I wanted to accomplish during my career.
Geez, that's amazing. I don't know if I'm worthy. But, you know, you and I have known each other for a while. I don't know how many decades, but we kind of see each other a lot at conferences and things. And you've done a lot of work around artificial intelligence. We want to get into that, especially as it relates to your work for independent agents and your opinions on what they might do. But let me first ask you, where are you from originally? How did you get to where you're at today?
It's a twisted road. So I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I went to school actually for journalism. And the reason I did that is because I'm curious. I want to know about everything and be there when interesting things happen. And so I was at a journalism conference in Houston, Texas, of all places, way back in the day, and when I was in college, and met my future wife there. And she's from Washington area. So I ended up in Seattle eventually. Here I am started with Safeco 15 years ago and working at Liberty now. But I did start my career out as a journalist, as a reporter, newspapers, and worked my way through a couple different newspapers and was in a newsroom. And the person running the website was leaving and they needed a replacement and they weren't serious about the internet. So they hired me it never looked back. I got in the technology space somebody reached out to me out of the blue working at the NBC affiliate in Seattle and said, "Hey, I'm looking for a content manager. Do you know anybody?" And I'm like, oh, sort of like a little like subtle way of saying you're interested in applying for this job. So I did. And I made the move, which was kind of weird for a newspaper person to go to TV. There's like kind of some dynamic there.
Yeah.
But I made the move and did not regret it. And while I was there, some friends working at Safeco said, "Hey, there's this job for this group called Bricks and Clicks," which was focused on digital marketing for insurance agencies. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't know why. I don't know anything about insurance, but I looked at what they were looking for and really all the things I'd been doing, SEO, content, talking with small businesses about how they could, you know, get their brand out there. It all sort of worked together and I made that jump and man, it's been awesome. I've been there 15 years now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, I too worked in journalism. I have a journalism degree from Rutgers and I worked at a daily paper for a while until a dark and stormy night when I couldn't take it anymore. And I answered an ad to be an editor at AM Best Company, Best Review Magazine. That was a long time ago. But I bring it up to say that journalism and writing and that curiosity you mentioned, that gene, is one of those foundational careers that can lead you anywhere. One time I was talking to a CEO of the Hartford. This is, you know, many CEOs ago. And he was like, he was an engineer. Like that was his background. And I'm like, how does engineering relate to running an insurance company? He goes, well, engineer, you learn how to think. You learn how to start with the foundation. It's a little bit like architecture. You know, you need a strong foundation and it's teach you how to think. And, you know, journalism is asking good questions, which is exactly what you're doing in this, in the latest effort around AI, and your learning and sharing of that knowledge is just asking. And it's so ironic in a way that the prompts that I know you're going to talk about here in a second up for AI are basically, you know, questions you might ask as a journalist, right? Tell me more about that. You know, you said definitely. This, what do you mean about that? You know, question, just a soliloquy.
Yeah. It's what I, in my role, you know, the way I look at everything I do is it's about going out and being curious, finding out what's out there, what people are actually doing, and then bringing that story back to everybody else. So, you know, it's much more powerful when I can say, hey, here's agents like you who are doing this, than it is this sort of general thing.
Mm-hmm.
The prompting thing, though, let's sort of unpack that a little bit. The one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time talking with agents about is how to speak to AI. And I think there's a lot of confusion about that. People are used to search, where you just ask a very simple, basic thing and you get a response back. And they use that in AI as well, like the ChatGPTs, Anthropics, Claude, Perplexity, whatever, you know, all those different tools out there. And they get this kind of like lackluster response. I always say you need to think about AI as like an assistant at your company. You don't just say to somebody, hey, go do this thing. You give them some details. And there are, I use an example of a non-technical example where, so say, for example, I say to you, Peter, is like, make me a sandwich. What would you make me?
I would go peanut butter and jelly, or I might go turkey club. One of those two. Those are what I like.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, now that, and that's great. But I gave you a very broad thing, and that's what a lot of people do with AI. They just ask a broad question, they get a broad response. And, you know, AI what it does is it takes, you know, whatever you ask it and gives you the most likely response back, the most common response back, unless you give it more details. You know, but if I said to you, hey, Peter, I'd like you to make me a Reuben sandwich. It should be on lightly toasted rye, organic sauerkraut, non-dairy cheese. Oh, and avoid meat because I'm vegan. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not, but, you know, it was the kind of thing is that the point there is that it sounds micromanaging, but I'm more likely to get that result back of that vegan Reuben. Mm-hmm. And it turns out vegan Reubens are a thing. I didn't think they were. I was going to test it with AI. And of course, AI came back with this fantastic recipe. And I'm like, I kind of actually want to make that.
Does it taste like rabbit food? I wonder.
I wonder. I didn't make it yet, but the dressing, it even gave me a dressing recipe too. And that actually looked pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no. So to answer your other question, your original question, make me a sandwich, I would say, what kind of sandwich? Would they prompt you back? What are you looking for?
If I said to the AI, make me a sandwich, ask me what else you need to know in order to make me that
sandwich. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
And it will do that. You know, it's like, you know, it's a really interesting thing is like for marketing is a great one too. Ask me what other information you need to write this particular content.
Yeah.
Or branding or whatever. And it'll say, hey, what's your audience's demographics? What are their psychographics? What do they think and feel? And it's not something that you might normally just ask for when you're typing in that prompt, but it'll prompt you to give it the answers that it needs to give you a better result.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's back up a minute because this area is so fascinating to me. Talk about some of the tools. Like when we say AI, what have you experimented with? And you can keep it to the top three or top five or whatever, because I'm sure you're doing a lot of experimenting. Yeah. And particularly the ones you think have really good applications for independent agents, which I know is your core audience, but you know, we could just say insurance professionals if it's more general.
I'd say the ones that have really good applications for your audience are the ones you use. You know, it's like, I'm just not to be flip, but it's like, I think people get paralyzed by there's all these different models out there. Which one's the best one? It's like, try them. ChatGPT is obviously the biggest. What's the second biggest, most frequently used AI model out there? Generative AI. What do you think it is?
I should probably know this, but I don't.
It's not Gemini, it's not Claude, it's not Perplexity. It's actually Canva.
Canva, yeah.
So you've got a tool that helps with marketing and, you know, generating images and video. It's being baked into those tools. So I think that, really it's a matter of I think finding a chat tool. I love Copilot.
Mm-hmm.
That I use. I've got the full version of it here at work, and it's built into Outlook. It wants to write every email. But you can go in there and it writes these really general, awful, you know, I hope you're doing well. And it's like, no emails ever, you know, found me well. But there is a way you can go in there and actually tune it to write more like you. So once you do that, you start getting stuff that's more efficient and sort of speeds up the process. I will never have to create a pivot table ever again in Excel because I just ask it to do it for me.
That's awesome.
Those things are very quick hit kind of things. But if the tool's in front of you and you're using it, then that's the best tool there is, because you're actually getting something out of it and learning from it as you use it more frequently and what works, what doesn't work. And they'll even tell you what things you can do to make it more effective.
And Canva is the design that's used a lot by designers, right? Artwork, photos, right?
Social posts, video.
Motion graphics.
Yep. Infographics. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's super popular tool in the creative space.
I guess I didn't think of it as an AI tool. Was it not an AI tool at the beginning? It's been around a while.
That's the interesting thing is Canva's been around for years and, you know, it's always been that sort of thing, but they have really gone in on putting those tools or AI into its tools. And that's actually a big part of what I'm looking at is when I look at the vendor space or the service space, there are a lot of existing vendors that we're all familiar with. And then there are ones who are purely AI plays that are just coming into the industry. The thing is, the what's interesting to me though, is the people that have been around for the business has been around for a long time, they're dropping AI in and a lot of agencies don't know it. Mm-hmm. Phone services, for example, the ones that a lot of agencies use, they're building in AI assistance and AI, analysis of calls and letting you know, hey, that call your salesperson just had, or, your CSR just had with a customer, there's a coaching opportunity there because, we analyzed the call and saw these things, or we took that and summarized it and made it a call note, or an activity note. So you're not spending time having to transcribe it yourself or recall it from memory and write down what you need to put in there to have a record.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned three tools, Dale: ChatGPT, Canva, and Copilot. Are there any others you want to mention real quick that you've been experimenting with?
Gemini is another one too, which is Google. The phone, anything on the phones is intriguing to me. There's another one called Notebook LM, which is also from Google. Does some really interesting things in terms of analyzing content and then generate it in multiple different ways. I was on a class or session we were teaching with Mitch Dunford, and he showed an example of Notebook LM creating content, creating a podcast from it, creating a video, and just sort of all these multiple steps along the way, creating a Q&A, if you're doing something with your staff that you want to make sure they understand how things work, or maybe you're creating a Q&A for your customers, it was generating all these things in a matter of seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing stuff. And it's still early days with all of this, which is the freakiest part. If you think it's interesting and crazy now, it's going to be even more interesting and crazy 6 months, a year from now.
Yeah. It's like when other people started getting fax machines and you could actually use them.
Well, I say pretty much the only way you can avoid AI now in business is to work with a typewriter and a fax machine.
That's right. So what's the difference between, again, I'm in the dumb question business, Dale. What is the difference between ChatGPT and Copilot?
There are no dumb questions, first of all, as we all know. So with ChatGPT, you've got this sort of standalone tool that you can go to. And so say I want to write an email. Mm-hmm. I can go to GPT and have it write it, or I can have it change the tone of it. Then I have to copy paste that back into Outlook.
Yeah.
Where Copilot, there is a version that's a web-based version too, that's standalone. But when you have the fully baked version that's tied into the tools, it's there all the time. I'm looking at a Copilot icon in my Word document right now that's open. It's in there in my PowerPoints. I can create a PowerPoint from an outline. Just say, here you go. Do it. Now, there are third-party tools that do that, that have done that for a couple of years now. But having it in the tools I use every day, I think it's a really great way to sort of streamline that or reduce that friction that you have. Oh, I have to go to another tool to use it. Now, I look at GPT, though, as from an analytical standpoint, a much more, I think, a more powerful tool overall. If I'm dropping in a bunch of random reports and say, okay, analyze these multiple things and tell me the commonalities between the two, or give me a different, you know, view of the data from these two disparate things. It's really good at that.
Yeah. So I know you've talked a lot in the past about prompts, like you were saying earlier about the sandwich. But there's some very interesting and curious things you brought up in our past conversations about things like sense of humor and being polite and things like that to these screens, these fields that you're filling in with words or sounds, you know, verbal or writing. Can you talk a little bit about some of the whole thing about prompt?
Yeah. So there's, you know, when you're doing prompts, first of all, it's a conversation. It's not, you get an output, you know, change the tone, make it more funny, make it more light, make it sound like, you know, my business's tone or my personal tone. There's an easy way to do that. So here's what you do is you get a few thousand words and that you've written, and you dump it into the AI model, whether it's ChatGPT, Copilot, Perplexity, any of these other ones, and say, analyze the style and tone of this text. It will come back with a really detailed description of the way you write, the way you, you know, talk in writing. And then you can say, look, you know, please write a prompt for me that I can use in the future to always write my content in the same style and tone as you just described. And it will create the prompt for you. So you don't even have to write the prompt. I also use the word please. There is some research out there that says that if you are polite to the AI when you are asking these things, that you get more complete, detailed responses than if you are abrupt and short. Because it starts to learn the way you write those prompts, it tends to respond in the same general way. So there's actually some research out there about that. And there's a lot of debate on how big of a deal it is. But I find it easier too, just to sort of, you know, maybe it's anthropomorphizing here or something like that, you know, thinking about like treating it like a human when it's not, and it never will be, but you know, it is, I seem to feel better about myself about not ordering something around, and being just polite to it.
Yeah. You know, I it's funny you say that. Even just people who have, Siri, or, you know, you have, these devices that are always seem to be listening. In fact, I just said that word and my phone is now of listening.
Course. Yeah.
But I find that just a quick example, like I'm looking for a piece of music. There's a new album by The Cure, so I'm trying to find it. And I asked it to play it. It's like, they're trying to sell me something, and I get it. They're trying to sell me a subscription. But I said, please. And next thing you know, they played three songs from the album. Maybe there's something
That's awesome.
There. Can you please just play a couple of songs from the album? You know,
it's rewarding us. Yeah, that's hilarious. I get that all the time with the Echo trying to pitch me and stuff. I'm like, no, I just get annoyed because it gives me the long description. I'm like, I don't want that. Stop.
I know, right? So, can you talk about some of the, because you're working with agents all the time, and your work at Liberty, your team. What you guys have done for agents, you know, these free tools to really help them, not just with AI, but for years and years with all kinds of things, you know, how to be better marketers and so forth. Have you run into some rock star agents who, they could be principals, they could be producers, they could be CSRs that are kind of really doing what you've discovered, like in their agency in a practical sense?
Yeah, and we feature a lot of them on Agent for the Future. And so we've got a whole section there on AI. We're actually rolling out some updated content here later this summer. And we've got research in there, but we do talk with specific agencies. I've got a webinar recorded with three rock star agents, as you say. I think they would appreciate that too.
Okay.
You know, concrete examples. And we're always adding more to it. You know, and it's not that difficult. Usually when I go out and I'm talking in front of a large group of agents, I'll say, hey, is anybody using policy checking services? Somebody will say yes. And I'll say, how does it work? And I'll have them walk me through it. So everybody else can hear it too. And I'm like, hey, at the end is like, oh, what's your name? Oh, Peter. Hey, everybody, this is Peter. If you have more questions about it, go talk to Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because they get to hear it from one of their peers right. and ask those specific questions that, you know, I'm not in it every day, but I am seeing the people who are doing it and, you know, asking them, hey, would you give this thing up? And they're like, no, never.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're facilitating the sharing of the knowledge. So more, and without naming specific agencies, in a general sense, where are you seeing early successes with AI? Again, in a practical sense, in the agencies.
Yeah,
how are they using it?
Yeah, there's several areas where I'm seeing people using AI in agencies, and just sort of like in a rough progression from simple to complex.
Mm-hmm.
Using AI to record meetings. So you've got the meeting notes, the summarization, the, you know, keeping track of what everybody agreed to do, content generation. So you're creating content for your websites, you're writing emails, you're softening the tone of emails, which is a lifesaver for a lot of people. You know, you're getting blown up by a customer and you want to respond back to them. And it's, hey, can you make the tone a little bit more empathetic on this? Huge help. Marketing automation. That's being built in the tools that people are using already today, you know, to create content. You're going to see marketing automation get to the level of at scale marketing to the individual using AI. And so that's one thing that I'm keeping a close eye on. Another one is you've got calls coming into the agency and people have been recording calls for years. But what they're doing now with the AI side of it is it's doing that same summarization, looking at intent and tonality of the conversation, you know, things like that, that you cannot get from just listening to a recording. And it saves the producers or the CSRs tons of time, you know, instead of having to write something up for the activity notes, it's done. Video proposals and video in general, you know, video proposals are still a small space of the industry, you know, where you basically record a video saying, hey, here's the proposal I'm giving to you, prospective client, look at these three things. Let me know what you think. Please get back to me or I'll reach out to you after you've had time to watch it. What the AI is doing there is it is actually going through and cutting out all the uhs and the ums, which is, I'm hoping you have something that's going to do that with this. So I sound more eloquent
course,
than
Dale.
I really am.
Of course.
And yeah, otherwise you can go through there manually and do it, right? And it's like, I've edited a lot of video and audio over the years and it is a bear to do that. And this thing does it in half a second. You know, it's mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. Or you can go into the transcript and say, cut these words out because I promised complete coverage. Oops, nope. Not true.
Yeah.
Cut that out. Gone.
Comprehensive coverage. All risk.
Yeah. I don't have to. Yeah. I just don't have to re-record the video. I just get that thing done. And I think that's going to be a nice benefit for a lot of agencies that are reluctant to do it because they're afraid of not being perfect. We know from our research about 13% of agencies of the high growth ones are using video proposals and about 40% more are interested in it. So, and I'm seeing the big networks and, you know, other groups are starting to implement that. Video proposals. So I'm really been talking with a lot of agencies about you really should be considering this because you're going up against somebody that's doing a video when you're sending a PDF in an email. That's not a competitive advantage to be doing a PDF. You know, it's just, bad. Okay. And then you get further on down the continuum and you get into predictive behavior. Is this customer likely to leave the agency? And, you know, and it uses data pulled out of the AMS and sometimes third-party data. So when you've got a limited amount of time to talk with all your clients, focus on the ones that are the biggest risks and save those. And you know, the ones who are you feel pretty confident about, it's more than just price. It's looking at other factors, too, that could, you know, cause them to move. And then another one, too, is policy checking. So you've got their current policy, you're quoting them a new one. Are they the same or are there differences? And what are those differences? There are tools now that will take both of those. Same thing at the renewal. You know, you've got the new policy versus the old policy. Are they still the same? Or you're quoting two different carriers. Show me what the differences are. And it will go through there and point those things out, you know, in a matter of seconds. You can also, as an agency, say, hey, there are other things I want all of my clients to have. And you can have it check that and say, okay, this thing isn't in there. We need to make sure that we ask them about getting this umbrella or something else. So that one I think is really intriguing because the agencies I'm talking to are telling me that they're reviewing 100% of their renewals using these tools. And I don't know about you, but I would say that most agencies are nowhere near that percentage of policy renewals of actually looking, going through line by line, looking through their policies
Yeah.
new.
That's
So that.
pretty, that, I mean, nobody makes money till the third year in insurance.
Yeah.
So keeping, I mean, I'm sure there's some data around this from Marsh or Reagan or Big I, where it shows even, 1% difference in renewals equals X amount of revenue difference over time and that sort of thing. 100% is astonishing and really not surprising because a lot of agents, unfortunately, are in the business of rinsing and repeating. Even if they win a chance at a new client, broker a record or whatever, they're just providing, apples to apples comparison on the price and not really taking the time to really think about what the client might need. Forget about what the old agent did. What do they really need in the new world? And they need to think about cyber. They need to think about the umbrella, as you said.
Exactly. Yeah, and having that structure is huge. It's because it's you've got a bunch of staff and they're all doing different things. How do you start to make those processes consistent across every person?
Yeah, reviewing the policy language. Wow, that is something so critical.
There's E&O risk, right? It's like, hey, I gave you the same thing you had last year. Oh, actually, I didn't realize that there was an exclusion there, or something else changed, or I went from one carrier to another. And that to me is a big one. I just literally this morning was talking with a group of agents, and somebody asked, what does it cost? And I'm like, okay, how much time does it take you to do a policy review now? And if you could do it in a matter of seconds, how much time is that going to save you? And then how much is it going to save you if you reduce the number of E&O claims you have because of that particular thing where you gave somebody something different than you said you gave them? You start to add those things up, and it starts to pencil out pretty quickly for a lot of agencies.
You mentioned earlier about video, and I, it's as journalists, we're, it's like, oh man, come on, like the written word is sacred, right? But people aren't reading like they used to. It's not just insurance, it's consumers in general. I mean, look what's happened with texting and, everybody's attention span is shorter, distracted, not reading. In fact, not even learning how to write. It's kind of sad, I think, in schools. And but video is a big deal. And talk about the ability to get your personality out there as a producer, to put some video together. How does it work in a practical sense with AI? How do videos get done? Because I can think of a lot of listeners out there saying, yeah, I know we need more video on our website. We have a lot of words. It's boring, a lot of jargon. We need to do a better job of marketing with video on social media too. More video on social media. How do you do it with AI?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it. Just AI is pretty good at creating sort of what called B-roll, which is sort of that background video that's it illustrates the point you're making by voicing, talking about something. So it can be used as a background video for a voiceover. You can use it to clean up video. I was talking about the editing thing with the video proposals tool where it cleans out the gaps. I always when I record stuff, I always if I make a mistake, I just stop for a second and then start over again so that it's easier to cut it. But AI can help you sort of take care of those things much more quickly. Then there are things that actually can create the whole video, take the whole story. That is still a relatively new area. It's still the quality is all over the place on that. But it is something to keep paying attention to. Then there's services that will take your voice. You can speak to it for a little while, get on video, and then it will actually create, you can then create give it scripts and it will speak the video for you. You don't actually have to get in front of the camera. I was actually doing a training with an AI training I was taking, and I saw this little logo up in the corner, and I'm like, "What's that?" And I click it, and it says, "This is a certified AI generated video," and I had no idea. This
Gee.
person, they had recorded them, and they were talking just like we're talking now, and there was the hand motions, the mouth is moving,
Oh, man.
and those kinds of things exist now. And so, and that's a great opportunity. It's also a great risk, right, from a deepfake perspective, which is a whole other thing.
Oh,
But
yeah.
it is something though that we're all going to have to grapple with,
Yeah.
and figure out how we can use it in a good way and how to prevent it from being used for evil.
So,
This is getting deep really quick, right? It's like, whoa.
yeah, existential stuff. I know. Where's this all headed? You can see commercials on TV that obviously are AI generated in whole or part. You can just kind of tell. Doesn't mean they're not entertaining, but it there's a creepiness factor to it, And you see, of course, Instagram, you'll see dogs talking, and the technology is gonna get better and better. And this is the fear that the Actors Guild, the people in LA are freaking about. It's
Oh,
like,
sure.
I totally get it. Where's this all going?
I'll give you another example that's not video, but I think it sort of falls into the same level, and that is the voice chatbots. There are you're on the phone talking to somebody, and you may not be talking to somebody. The one of the, actually, in fact, one of the agents I had on the webinar last fall, at RightShare Insurance, Jeff Arnold, he has a voice chatbot, and it will, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but he talks about the chatbot will be going along the way and answering, getting you to answer all these questions, and say, "Will you mind if I pass you off to one of the famously friendly humans at RightShare Insurance?" And it will pass them off. So apologies, Jeff, if I got that wrong on the phraseology there, but it sounds legit real, and it's pretty intriguing, the way that stuff works. I've had another agency; they get 100 calls a day. 90% of them never has to have a human interact with it before that customer's needs are met. And so when you think about from a hiring standpoint and a staffing standpoint, okay, that's one less thing that people have to do who hate answering the phones anyway. And so I shouldn't say hate, but it may be something that it's just a huge amount of time and effort to be doing these service tasks that the AI can handle for you.
So from a customer, the other side of the phone, though, what is that experience like?
It's way better than the one. It's like, press one for this, press two for this. Oh my God.
People hate that.
Nobody likes that.
Nobody
This is
likes
a
that.
much smoother experience.
I know I've run into this. There's I call it a Spidey sense, Dale, or whatever. But when I call different service providers, could be the Ford dealer, could be anybody, you get a sense that it's not a real person. But I think we're going to have to accept it if it gets you your answer quicker and it's on a phone tree from hell. Maybe that's okay,
It's
right?
the payoff, right? It's still not a human, but maybe I don't need to talk to a human. Maybe I don't want to talk to a human, but I do want to get this thing done. It's 3 in the morning and I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, my credit card just got canceled, and I know, renewal's coming. I better tell somebody about that. I'd rather just get it
Get
done
it
and go back to
done.
sleep than lay awake in bed, which I've done that more than once, not with credit cards, but certainly thinking about things I wish I could have handled more quickly.
Yeah, I need an auto ID card, certificate of insurance, whatever it is. I just need it done. And I think the younger principals, agency owners already know this, that that's not really the kind of service interactions that customers put a high value on. It's sort of like table stakes. What they need is what we've known all along, is that they need more meaningful interactions, the risk management help and loss control. And did you know that your umbrella's only a million and you really should have two, or at least we can quote up to five. And talk about things that customers really need, not spending time on the auto ID card.
Yeah, I think that kind of brings it back to the whole AI piece, is that, AI is an augmentation of our abilities. It helps us, that assistant, that augmentation, we can do more things that are more important while it does the rote things, the repetitive things that we really don't want to do. So, my way of thinking about AI is, how do I help agencies power up their employees to be as efficient as possible at the tasks they do, and take off their plates the tasks that are expenses for the agency? Keying in data, it's an expense. Issuing those ID cards, it's an expense. Now, if I take people, it's not a cross-sell opportunity. I just need an ID card. I'm on the side of the road. I don't want to be cross-sold. It's not a sales opportunity. So
No.
save that time for those conversations where, yes, you need this additional coverage. Hey, I'm reviewing your policy and I see there's these things here you really should know about, that is a gap. Let's talk about that. That's where I think AI has some real power, is to free up that time. You know, I'm looking at my week right now. I save at least 6 hours a week, trying to close in on 10 hours a week using AI. That, you know, things that I don't enjoy doing, I'm trying to figure out how to offload some of those things to AI so I can focus on what matters more.
You personally, you mean, right?
More podcasts with Peter.
Yeah. That's what I want. Yeah. So you've 6 hours a week you save with what some of the tools you mentioned?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is at work. So, you know, and so that to me has been super helpful because it's a work-life balance thing too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little less stressed. I know I'm a little less stressed, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, true. So what should people be a little nervous about? Or, you know, you hear the downsides of AI and maybe they'll evolve over time. I know they will evolve over time. Things hallucinations and legal, the legal side, the copyright side, you know, what should agents be concerned about there?
Yeah. I mean,
and how do they deal with it?
Yeah. I mean, hallucination things, let's put that to bed. So AI is going to get it wrong. Just like a human that you ask to do something can get it wrong. You know, everything needs to be checked. I never look at what AI is putting out as the final product. I look at that as the first draft. Always edit it. You know, I spend time, you know, anything that it generates for me, I'm still going through it, making sure, is this really right? Is this the way I want it to sound? Is this data correct? Where'd you get that information from? You know, you have to do that. And it's the hallucination thing's not going away for now. You know, they're figuring out ways to try and make it better. And actually, a lot of the problems with hallucinations are the way you ask things. You can tell it something that to you, you think is truth, and it will go with it. It's not going to contradict you. So if you're giving it faulty information, it'll just amplify it. But the things that I fear more than anything else is businesses not knowing and not setting how AI is being used in their businesses and setting guardrails around it. So we have some research that, you know, agents saying, hey, a bunch of them say that we think we're only going to be using AI in the next few years. And my personal perception is that most agencies are already using AI or will be using it this year. And it's for two reasons, because one is that knowledge workers, 75% of them, according to Microsoft, use AI, either personally or professionally. And a lot of people who use it personally are bringing it to work. You know, what's the harm in writing an email? What's the harm in maybe analyzing some customer data in a free AI model? Well, you know, you're training the AI model on that data, and now your private data, your PII, you know, you've got a huge issue with your customer data being released essentially to a model that other people could find. And then the second part of it is that AI is coming in all these different tools we're talking about. You know, it's agency management systems. You know, you had the you sat down with Reed Holdsworth last year, got to watch you recording that podcast. And, you know, Reed talked about CSRs, you know, that they're trying to help them save time with email by summarizing those emails and dumping them into the activity notes.
Mm-hmm.
One example of an existing tool that's been around for a long time now has AI in it. And the big problem I see with that and with the personal use is that most agencies do not have an AI usage policy.
Mm.
I had 15 agencies in a room today. One raised their hand when I asked if they had a policy. Now, if I'd asked them the next question is, do you have a social media policy? Most of the hands would go up. Remember when everybody freaked out about social media?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, we need a policy. Don't let people use it. You know, I had an agency that actually said they used to collect people's phones and put them in a safe so they couldn't do social media at work. You know, but today, hey.
They were a bank-owned agency. Get it?
Every AI model out there is accessible on my phone. And I guarantee you, your people and your agencies and your businesses are using AI and you don't know it. And you don't have a policy that tells them what's okay and what's not okay. That is a big challenge and a big risk.
So what goes in it? I mean, how do you even write one? Do you use AI to help you write it?
You know, actually, that it sounds funny, but it does a pretty good job because there are a lot of AI policies out there. It's ingested all those. It can give you a summary of the basics.
Okay.
You know, there are the Big Eye. If you're a Big Eye member, they have a policy it's fill in the blanks. It's Mad Libs of AI policies. So it gives you a foundation, something to work from. There are a bunch of other ones out there. We've got some resources on Agent for the Future that point to other places you can go to get those. There's a lot of them out there. Really, you're starting to set some, expectations. Here's how we will use it. Here's how we will not use it. Here's the tools we are willing to use. Here's the tools we're not willing to use. Use our paid model. Don't use some other free model without talking through it. And here's some things you can put into it and some things you probably should never put into it. Like identifiable customer information. Putting somebody's customer data, their name and address and social security number in a record, bad stuff. You know, maybe you want to anonymize that data before you put it in there.
Interesting. God, there's so much to know. And we're out of time, but I do have one maybe more personal question because I really like this one. And that is like, are you mentoring anybody, Dale, right now in the insurance industry? And the second part is who was your mentor? Who is your mentor? As you, somebody in the past, somebody currently?
Mm-hmm. I and the rest of my team do a lot of consulting with agents. So, we're super accessible that way. Love to talk with people about their business challenges and opportunities and how we can help them sort of hone in on the things they want to do and get it done more quickly, because there are a million options out there. And it's like, we'll help focus down to a few that'll help you focus your efforts. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple mentors. One was moving from newspapers to work at a TV station. And he told me, he said, look at the, newspaper people and TV people, don't get along really well. And so I thought, I don't know if I want to work for a TV station, but he said, look at the business and its reputation. And, are they a big journalism company, or are they a company that's just trying to, chase the ratings? And so that gave me a little more comfort, because they were owned by a company that really had a strong journalism background.
Mm-hmm.
And then on, coming here to Safeco First and now, working for Liberty, somebody, talked to me about, does it align with my values? And can I learn, there are things I don't know. I don't know anything about insurance. Is this something I can really be successful at? And like, well, you can learn that stuff, sort of talk me down off the ledge that I don't think I'm ready. And that was super helpful. And then I had another business coach who once told me, to always be thankful, sort of approach life with a feeling of gratitude. And so, I've always found that appreciation opens a lot of doors. And so I just want to say, before we go anywhere else, Peter, I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dale. Same. It's been great to chat with you in person, and to do this too. So we need to stay in touch, because you're in the space where, like I said, going from the theory and a lot of terminology people don't get yet, to making it real for people and trying to help people. That's awesome. So thank you. Thank you for all you're doing to help independent agents.
Hey, thank you.
All right, my friend, take care and we'll stay in touch.
Great. Looking forward to the next conversation.
Yes, sir.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.